We're no saviors if we can't save our brothers. We're no saviors if we can't answer your Columbia House Party mailbag questions. Jake, what's up, man?
Not much. Nailed that. I love that. That's such a good, like, it's a good opening song. It's a good opening to this mailbag, and yeah. I'm into it.
Let's get it. All right. This is your May mailbag. As a reminder, lots of stuff going on. Please rate and subscribe. All that good stuff. Those little reviews on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts make us feel nice. Please continue to be an awesome community in the Discord chat. That's been a lot of fun lately. We need to talk about something important. Jake bought a new pink shirt.
I did buy a new pink shirt. That must have been like just manna from heaven for you when you knew we were recording today and you saw me tweet that.
Well, the banter segment on my run sheet was empty.
Here's some banter material. I did. I bought several shirts. I bought my summer clothes. I'm excited. I'm feeling good.
Where did you? What's your go-to? Do you have like? Obviously you shopped online, so it's a brand
course,
that you
yes.
trust the sizing of and everything.
Yeah, I mean, like I'm a basic boy, so I'm like a fast fashion H&M Uniqlo kind of guy.
Yep.
The ones today are from H&M, so I got a black short sleeve button up, a pink short sleeve button up. And a black button up with palm trees on it, which is a pattern. Nice. I'm not a pattern guy. And then I just got two pairs of shorts because it's hot today. It's getting close to shorts time.
It is warm today. I was not out in shorts, but I was out in a t-shirt earlier, which felt really nice.
Yeah.
It's maybe not quite t-shirt weather yet. But the day before that, I had gone out in a hoodie. And because I was wearing a hoodie and a hat and a face mask, it was like, I feel like it was 5 degrees warmer and I was very sweaty.
Yeah, I went out to do my weekly shop a couple days ago in just like a bomber jacket and I was outright sweating. So getting close to that, like button up in a t-shirt weather time.
I'm doing the thing right now where every year at this time I will... kind of like I don't have a very big closet, so I have to kind of change my closet over from a winter closet to a more summery closet and like put some of my hoodies in storage and bring some of my like t-shirts and shorts out of storage and then also donate a bunch of clothes that either don't fit anymore or have seen too many summers already, but mostly the don't fit anymore thing because these quarantine beers adding up.
They sure are. We are actually like having to very consciously combat that recently. We kind of had a moment last weekend of like, oh boy, time for us to maybe eat a little better and get the smallest amount of exercise we can because, oh boy.
You guys have an exercise bike, right?
We do, which is key. Without that in these times, I genuinely don't know how I would like do anything.
I mean, I'm generally an outside runner. That's how I get that part of it for me. But
yeah, I'm not. I'm just like my knees aren't great. And every time I've tried to like run outside, 10 minutes in, my knees are just like, this is a mistake. What are you doing? So the bike is key for me or else I would be even fatter than I am currently.
There you go, guys. Jake's going to be coming out of social distancing, looking good in a pink button up shirt.
Just sweat stains all over it.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. All right. We got to fire up the mailbag. We're going to answer your questions if your mail's safe in this town.
Try
guess your mail is not safe in this town.
It's not, which is why the first question is not going to one of our readers, not coming from one of our readers or our Discord users or anything like that. Not readers, listeners. I'm so used to being a writer first and a podcaster second. I'm sorry. I'm also hijacking the podcast. The first question today comes from me. On May 18th, Jake Goldsby tweeted, "Time for my semi-annual attempt to listen to the Wonder Years a bunch and get really into them. Maybe it'll take this time." My question, Jake, is how did that go?
Better than it has before, I would say. So as for background, the Wonder Years are a band that all of my close music friends really like. Blake, I know they're one of, if not your favorite band. And they've just never really stuck with me for some reason. It's not that I dislike them, and it's not that I have anything against them. They just, every time I've attempted to dig into them and get into them, I just find myself halfway through the record wanting to listen to something else. But I was inspired by a guest, you and him talking about them, and also by the fact that the Aaron West and the Roaring Twenties, also known as Dan Campbell, the lead singer of the Wonder Years, solo record from last year was one of my favorite albums of last year. I thought I'd give it another go. And yeah, I think my opinions on the records haven't, like the records individually, haven't really changed in terms of what I like ranking wise. Like, I still think No Closer to Heaven is my favorite. I'd never really given Greatest Generation a real go until this time, though. And
what did you enjoy it less than
you expected,
or about what you expected?
I actually think I enjoyed it a little bit more than I expected. Okay, but great. I can definitely see how if I had got into that record when it came out, how people really, really like the Wonder Years.
Yeah, I think that it's the same for The Upsides, which came out in 2010 and was my introduction to the Wonder Years. And it was kind of like The Upsides for me came out at a time when it was like, okay, like, is pop punk, or is at least my relationship with pop punk kind of over? Like where is this going? What's the transition from like the Motion City Soundtrack era of pop punk? And The Upsides was really great. It's a very empathetic and smart record as far as pop punk goes. And then the thing that I've always appreciated about the Wonder Years is that for my particular fandom, I feel like, you know, and some bands do this and some bands don't, and it's okay to do it or not do it, but I feel like they've kind of grown up in lockstep with me, where, you know, The Upsides is a very, like, I'm in college album. The Greatest Generation, which came out two albums later in 2013, is very much about grappling with something that I was grappling with in 2013, which was, you know, do I want the suburbia life that all my friends have? And do I want to, you know, after high school, after college, go back to my hometown and get married? And this is what it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was around the time that I had quit my job and gone back to school. And a lot of my friends from home were, you know, hey, that's like, what the hell are you doing, man? You're chasing a dream too late. And they're all starting to have kids and stuff like that. So that one really hit me. And then, as you know, No Closer to Heaven in 2015 is a much more adult album. And then Sister Cities, I didn't think lived up to No Closer to Heaven. Like, it's not, in terms of sound, it's a natural progression, but I didn't, you know, I think thematically there's some stuff on that album that I can't quite relate to as much as the earlier ones. But yeah, to me, No Closer to Heaven and the first half of Sister Cities strike me as albums that Jake Goldsby would like.
And that's pretty much accurate. Like, I think we've talked this, just you and I, many times, that the first 4 or 5 songs on Sister Cities might be the best work they've done. And then the rest of the album,
Pyramids of Salt kicks ass.
Yeah, and like Raining in Kyoto is so good, and the title track's amazing. But then the second half of that record doesn't quite hold up as much for me.
No, I agree.
And I feel like, if like the first half of Sister Cities is what I think I want that band to be. But that being said, I really like No Closer to Heaven. Like, I make a playlist every year of my favorite songs of the year. And then just like January and February, that's mostly what I listen to, just that on shuffle. And in 2015, I think because of you recommending it, I put on Cardinals on that playlist. And that's still like such a good song. Oh, my God.
And this is that song, Cardinals by the Wonder Years.
Cardinal crashed into my window. I think he might die. I plan him a funeral. I'll read his last rites, cause I know what he saw in that reflection of light. At last, it's a better life. Staring at a hole in your chest, it's been dark there for decades. American broken promises, caught between the lies you've been fed and a war with your bloodstream. I should have been there when you needed a friend, but I was all for my own again. Selfish and stupid. So if you call me back, let me in. I swear I'll never let you down again. I know the devil you've been fighting with. I swear I'll never let you down again. So if you call me back, let me in. I swear I'll never let you down again. I know the devil you've been fighting with. I swear I'll never let you down again. So if you call me back, let me in.
Ah, that's good stuff. I'm glad you like them a little more this time around, Jake.
I think they'll stick somewhat in my rotation now. Or if not, at least they're a band that when we can do shows again, I would go see. That's what I would say.
Yes, they're great live. The last time I saw them was off of Sister Cities. I saw them with Steve and our friend Kramer. The next question comes from Brian, and he asks, when is the Against Me show? I'm guessing he means when we're doing an Against Me episode. Jake, you are more passionate about this than I am.
Yeah, Against Me are one of my all-timer bands, I guess. I don't know exactly where they would fall in my like total rankings, but they're definitely somewhere in the top 10, top 15 for me. We will be doing an Against Me episode at some point. It's been on our brainstorm sheet since I think we started this.
Yeah.
But hoping to find some other perspectives for that one, I think.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's the important thing, especially because I think Transgender Dysphoria Blues is the album to do. And there's going to be some stuff on there in terms of, you know, content that, you know, we don't have the right perspective on, but also in terms of, you know, the impact of having an album that good and, you know, an in-process band, like exploring something like that the way Laura Jane Grace did. You know, that's something that I think it would be helpful to have alternate perspectives on. Mm-hmm. So once we figure that out, they're on the list, though, for sure. All right, the next question comes from Jay Nielsen. He asks, you can only listen to bands that start with the same letter. So for example, B gets you The Beatles, Blink-182, Broken Social Scene, Belle and Sebastian, etc. Which letter do you pick? The qualifier here is that the bands don't count under T, they count under, so The Beatles count as B.
I have another clarifier question in that vein. What about names? Like, is Jason Isbell under J or I?
So this was my question as well, because that changes my answer. Like, same. The Nielsen used the B as an example, which is a really good letter. Like, when I scanned through the music that I have saved, this did not quite follow Wheel of Fortune rules. Like, I'm not going L or N, I don't think. Even R is maybe a little tough. S and T obviously are good. But if you throw last names in there and I get Phoebe Bridgers in with Blink and a bunch of other B names, you know, that gets interesting. So let's say we go by last name.
Okay.
Because I'm just thinking how I would organize like my records, and I would go by last name.
That's how mine organized as well. But I just wanted to clear that up for the answer.
We'll go by last name. So what do you got?
It's hard to pick just how many are we doing here? It's hard to pick. Are we just picking one?
Whatever. Yeah, whatever.
I think I would probably start with C. Because in C, you get Captain Jazz, you get Nick Cave, you get Chance the Rapper, you get Churches, you get The Clash, you get Cloud Nothings, you get Constantines, you get Converge, you get Crooked Fingers, you get Cursive, you get Cut Copy, you get Cartel.
I know that's not a Jake Goldsby band, but that's a Blake Murphy band.
But yeah, I've actually had this thought before, not this organized. Like when I used to go to record stores, like, wow, there's a lot of bands that start with this letter. You get The Cure, you get Catch 22 for some ska, you get Camp Cope.
You get Camp Cope twice for the alliteration.
Get Camp Cope twice. Get Culture Abuse. A lot of good C bands, I would say.
Yeah, there are. I was more, less precise than you. And for me, it's just, if you're in a scenario like this, where this is the only stuff you get to listen to, volume to me is so important. And it's really hard for me not to pick S.
Yeah, S was probably my number two pick as well.
Which I realize is, like, it's not that interesting an answer because I'm not going on which bands are in there. But, like, obviously a lot of good bands start with S. And it's just, like, you just get so much more variety and so much more volume than you would with a lot of other letters. I had B as a runner-up. And then as two kind of dark horses, a lot of bands start with A, even if you don't get, like, say, if for A Perfect Circle, that's a P, not an A. There's still a lot of A bands. And then if you were a hip hop fan, you more or less have to go with L because you get the entire class of yeah. Lils.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. My dark horse pick is H, mostly because the Hold Steady are in there. Hotelier, Hold Steady, Hop Along, Heart Attack Man. What else do I have in there? Heartless Bastards, Hot Water Music, Hot Chip, Hawks, Harvey Danger.
There you go. A
lot of favorites in there. How to Destroy Angels, How to Dress Well, Husker Du.
What you've got to start doing is where I try to work in Judas by Fozzy into every episode, you got to start trying to work in Harvey Danger to every episode.
Well, we're going to do one of those. We're probably not going to do a Fozzy episode.
You don't think? Well, we'll see. Just remember who controls the spreadsheets for the most part, Jake.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
All right. That's a great question, by the way.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on. This one's from Lauren. She asks, inspired by Hanif Abdurraqib on Twitter, share with me a band or artist whose best song is their most popular song. And I will lead us off with this.
There's a place off Ocean Avenue where I used to sit and talk with you. We were both 16 and it felt so right. Sleeping all day, corner of Cherry Street. We would walk on the beach in our bare feet. We were both 18 and it felt so right. Sleeping all day, staying up all night. Staying up all night. If I could find you now, things would get better. We could leave this town and run forever.
Tight snare.
Yeah.
Love it. What a good song.
That's my number one pick out of the gate. Trying to stay as on like brand and genre as possible here. Ocean Avenue by Yellow Card is certainly their most popular song. And I'm a Yellow Card fan. Like I've danced around on that discography and it's their best song.
Way Away is also a very good song, but
it is a good song.
Yeah, I would agree.
You know, you're not busting out the air violin at a red light.
No. And like, if I'm making a playlist to like for anything and I have to pick a Yellow Card song, obviously I'm picking Ocean Avenue.
Yes. I have a couple other answers for this one. We mentioned Phoebe briefly earlier. I think to this point, Motion Sickness is probably her most popular song, and I think it's her best song. We covered this one on an early, early Columbia House Party episode, but Dancing on My Own by Robin is, I think, probably still her biggest song and her best one. And then this was my hot take from the Fall Out Boy episode, or not hot take, but I guess boring episode, is that Sugar We're Going Down is the best Fall Out Boy song. I don't know if it's been surpassed by a song. Like, I don't know if technically Light 'Em Up, whatever that song was called, passed it in terms of popularity. But it's their most important song. And I think it's their best one.
I think that's
fair. So those are my answers.
For me, my sort of on-brand one, and to judge most popular, because I get that's kind of subjective, I just looked at Spotify plays and it worked out. So Welcome to the Black Parade, I think, is probably My Chemical Romance's best song. It's not my favorite song, but I think it's their best song, and it's their most popular on Spotify. I also thought that 1979 by the Smashing Pumpkins is their most played on Spotify, and I think it's probably their best song, even though if you want to get me ranting about why Machina 2 is the best Smashing Pumpkins record, I can do that another time, but it is. This is a tougher question than I think I expected it to be. Because, like, there's a lot of bands that I think you could consider their most popular song their best song, because it is their most popular. But, like, I don't know how to gauge it. Like, I think of a band like Motion City Soundtrack, like, Everything Is All Right is an incredible song. But is it their best song? They have so many good songs that I don't know.
There's also the element that we've run into a couple times doing episodes where, like, what we think is the most popular album from a band is not. A little hard to filter by, but it's a good question. It's a good question from Hanif and from Lauren.
I'm going to put this one as a huge caveat, because I am absolutely not convinced it's their best, but I think you can make the argument that Common People by Pulp could be on that list.
That's a good choice. Good choice. I'm still going with Ocean Avenue by Yellow Card as my number one pick.
Also, Everybody Wants to Rule the World by Tears for Fears, because I want to talk about Tears for Fears one day.
Yeah, talk about it right now. We got time.
We'll do an episode about Songs from the Big Chair one day.
All right. We have a trio of questions now from Mike Roy. What's weird is that he didn't just, like, spam the mailbag channel once the call for mailbag questions came out. These were, like, these organically came up a couple of times over the last month, but they all pair together really well for a little segment here about you and I, Jake. About you and I? No, about you and me. Grammar. Professional writer.
Is it the Wilco writer song or the Walkman album? Hey. Sorry.
Oh boy.
Sorry.
Mike's first question is, if you were both pro wrestlers, what would your signature move be? Jake, obviously this is a question that's much more important to you, and you've given a lot more thought to over the course of your life. So I'll let you answer first.
I feel like mine would be kind of like, you know, when Homer's a boxer and the strategy is just let them tire themselves out and punch him in the face a bunch. Mine is like the opposite of that. So it'd be me.
Where you just,
like,
punch a guy in the face a bunch?
No, like, I'm running away and they exhaust themselves trying to catch me. And then when they're exhausted, I trip them.
We spent the early part of the podcast, though, talking about your poor cardio.
No, my cardio is fine. I just can't, like, run outside long distances. But my actual...
That's a tough part of this strategy.
My endurance is strong.
Are your knees going to hold up to this strategy, though?
I mean, that's up to the script to decide, am I right?
Oh, come on.
But yeah, I feel like whatever allows me to avoid any sort of pain is my move.
The move then would to become a manager. Do what a lot of the, a wrestler, once they get too old or they're not good enough in the ring, or sometimes if you're too small to make it on, like, the biggest stages or whatever, those pivot to being a manager. Then you only get, like, you gotta take a punch once every storyline or something like that as the big blow off.
Let me shit talk, but then have someone else do the fighting for me.
Exactly.
That's
exactly
both my life and my wrestling move.
All right. For me, like, I'm going to be realistic about my athleticism here, and I would probably have to be what's known as a ring technician. Not a lot of flash. As with every sport I've ever played, it would have to be more about effort and technique instead of finesse. Not a lot of finesse in my game. As such, I would probably have a submission finisher. It would suit the style of wrestler I am a little bit more. I'm personally fond of the Dragon Sleeper and Dragon Sleeper variations. So I would go with something like that. I would rename it, obviously, though, because the Dragon Sleeper belongs to someone else. It was Ultimo Dragon. I can't steal his name for the move, even if I'm stealing his move. I will say that Zoobs can attest that I have a pretty good flying elbow. But I don't know if in 2020 you can...
Why can Zoobs attest to that?
We were doing like a group run at St. Mike's one time, and they had left the high jump mat out, and I climbed up something and did a flying elbow drop off of it or onto the high jump mat. Good form. That's the two things you can judge a ring technician by are the quality of his spine buster and the quality of his flying elbow, because they're not high flash moves, but they've got to be tight and compact. And it, for whatever reason, the best technicians tend to do a good spine buster and a good flying elbow. But yeah, not there would not be a lot of flash to my game. And I don't think a flying elbow can get over as a finisher in 2020 when guys are doing like 720 flips off the top rope. But
right. Fair.
What can you do? All right. Mike's second question from this little segment. What is your favorite thing to roast the other one about? And what is your favorite thing about the other person? So we got to awkwardly...
Got to get deep here.
Yeah. Not awkward at all. You can go first, Jake.
Want me to start? I think roasting, and I will say roasting in a nice way, because I know you're a sensitive lad.
Well, we are friends.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm sensitive. But
whatever. But I think you're... That's kind of what it is. Like, you're... The two things I like roasting you the most about is your work ethic and how you never take a rest for anything, and how if I say, hey, can we talk about this in 6 days, I'll have an email with like an organized spreadsheet by that evening.
Sorry about that last week, by the way. Hey, no, it was good. We can worry about this on the weekend, but here's a 2-page document.
That and you're like... overwhelming niceness is always fun to roast you about. Like when you like make an album, like when we're recording and you like say the wrong album name, you apologize like 20 times, which is 19 yeah. times too many. So that's always yeah. fun to roast you about. And my favorite thing about you is your like unending well of empathy. Like whenever people are down or having a hard time, it's or not even a hard time, just like when there is an issue amongst a group of friends, you don't ask questions about it. And it's just like, oh, okay, this is an issue. I am supportive of that. Or you're having a bad day. I'm supportive of that. And it never has to be explained. And it never has to be like, here's why I think this is bad. It's just like, yeah, no, cool. I'm on board.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
No problem.
I would say my favorite thing to roast you about was originally like, it was just, it's too easy to work in Degrassi jokes
yeah.
once in a while. Yeah. But since we started doing this podcast, going to the well of Jake was a shitty teen or a shitty 20-year-old is has been a lot of fun. It's been good new material for the last 6 months or so. Of course, Jake was a jerk about that or up his own ass about that.
Yeah.
Which is great. And then my favorite thing about you is you're an excellent podcaster and you have aww. Excellent taste in... no, I'm kidding. It would be a little up our own ass.
Boy, you're so good at doing this show.
Yeah. Yeah, and you picked a great co-host. And, mine's similar to yours in that I feel like you're one of my least judgmental and most empathetic friends in terms of, you know, I don't feel, you know, there are some friends that you don't want to be completely open with, especially in bad times. And I don't feel like that with you at all, where, you know, and part of that is we covered in our origin story episode how our friendship was kind of built in bad times, and maybe that makes that easier for us. I'm not sure, but
yeah, I think it does. Yeah, yeah
that's what I appreciate most about you is that, like, you know, some friends I'm gonna be like, okay, I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to tell this person the extent of what I'm feeling or the degree of what I'm feeling, and I don't feel like that with you at all. I feel like I can be 100% about the good and the bad.
I like that your roasting me was. You were a judgmental shit when you were younger, and now the thing you like is that I'm not as judgmental, which I think is personal growth.
Not about people, and not about your friends, anyway. you know, if I came to you with a bad music take, I would not expect you to be particularly empathetic about it. But, you know, we'll talk about that in the Fozzie episode.
I'm getting better.
All right. And the last one of this series from Mike is, in the cinematic universe of Jake and Blake, who would you cast to play yourselves? And we're supposed to pick for each other, but you can pick for yourself as well if you would like.
So just on like physical appearance, it's just Harris Whittles because we look very similar to each other.
Yeah. Give me that wheat.
Yeah.
One of the best tweets of all time.
All of his tweets, the best tweets of all time. Like when we no longer had Harris's tweets is when Twitter went down the tubes.
I want wheat thicks.
I think about his don't repost your own jokes because that's not chill a lot. Cause then you're just like, if you're posting a change where you said the funny thing, then you're just saying, look at the funny thing I did. And that's not chill. I think about that a lot. I feel like Whittles is a big one.
Good advice.
I don't know who else. I'm an oddly proportioned dude. So like finding physical matches is tough. So I think spiritually, just because we just watched it and Cassie yelled at me about it for like 3 weeks, Jake Johnson, but only in New Girl, not him in general,
okay,
but just him as that Nick Miller is like basically me as a person.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So
I have a couple other picks for your casting.
Please,
if that's okay.
Please.
The first was Channing Tatum, just for the physical similarity.
Oh, yeah.
Also, like a small kind of independent Canadian actor, Jake Goldsby, would probably do a pretty good job playing you. And then the appearance isn't there, but spiritually, this is what I came to, and I think it's in part due to the OC month and it being pointed out that, you know, Adam Brody's divorce guy energy. I don't mean to say that you have divorce guy energy, but I feel like Adam Brody, since you guys were, he played a similar role to what you were as a teen and an early 20s, could probably learn to play an early 30s Jake Goldsby.
Yeah, and we're both Jews, so, you know, lean in.
There you go. That's all my answer was just stereotyping.
He is also Jewish.
Yeah, the only Jewish actor I could think of.
what are yours?
Yeah, I don't have many good ones. The one, this makes me feel arrogant because obviously I'm not nearly as good looking or charming as this person. But I've had multiple people tell me that I maybe not look like, but like have the energy of Paul Rudd in the first act of every movie when he's still like sad or miserable.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
First act of Role Models, Paul Rudd is the one that I've gotten before.
That was what I was going to narrow it down to of all his roles as well. For sure.
Yeah,
you're like, you're less like angry and confrontational, but you are in the sad zone for sure.
Yeah. And then the other one was coincidentally enough, in terms of like personality, maybe like drinking buddies, Jake Johnson, if he, you know, leaned into the beers a little bit too much, he obviously would have to, you know, Jake Johnson's a little too small to play me, but he might have to, if he leans into the beers or whatever. I like drinking buddies. Jake Johnson is
a great
very different Jake Johnson than New Girl Jake Johnson.
Yes. That's a very good pick for you.
Do you have any picks for me?
I'm trying to think. It is tough for you. I feel like,
you know what I feel like the issue would be? I feel like the issue is that like my personality and like kind of who I am or what I am is like, I would never be the lead in something. I would always be like
right,
the supporting
same.
Piece. So that's a little harder to cast for.
I feel like it's not a perfect match, but like less like an intelligent Andy from Parks and Rec fits you a little bit.
Okay.
Like if like obviously not a moron, but just that like lovable
and not lovable in real life, a both sideser.
Yeah, yes, not Chris Pratt. I'm specifically casting his character, but just like lovable, affable, sweet, non-judgmental, nice boy who loves his, and of course Jason Mendoza, intelligent Jason Mendoza, because of your just because of your Bortles. Jags need your Bortles
exactly. The this question comes from Sean Woodley, who is the co-host of Basketball with Katie Heindel on the Stringer Podcast Network, our sister podcast. Sean and Katie are great. What are some bands and artists that overhauled their sound after you got into them and did so in ways that you really liked?
So I'm so excited that Sean asked this question because it gives me an excuse to talk about one of my favorite bands that I could talk about for days, but I won't. But I will talk about the one part that relates to this question, which is a band that completely overhauled their sound. So as you may know, because I've talked about it once or twice, when I was in high school, I was really into ska. And there was a... and I had a CD by a band called RX Bandits. And their first record, halfway between here and there, is a very, like, standard third wave ska record. It's good. The musicianship is probably a little better than your average third wave ska band. But, like, nothing special. Then I went to see them when I was in high school. They opened for Real Big Fish at the Phoenix. And I went expecting to hear these like fun ska tracks, as did I think most of the crowd who weren't familiar with them. And they came out and just played basically a loud prog rock set. And it was amazing. And they put out four records after they sort of made the switch from ska to whatever you want to classify them as, and they're all like genuinely incredible, and I could talk for days about how I think this band should have been the biggest thing in the world, and for whatever reason their own others never like fully hit into more of a mainstream sound, but they're so good. For an example of their sound and how far away they got from third wave ska, this is a song off I believe their fifth record, Mandala, called Bled to Be Free. Not exactly third wave ska.
Good stuff.
But they're so good. They're so good. And I wish they would get back together and tour again when touring can happen again.
All right. My answer for this one is one we've kind of discussed at some point before. I don't know. We've done a lot of these podcasts now. I'm losing track of when I've said different things. But for me, there were a couple of my pop punk slash emo favorites that got synth poppy right around the time that I got synth poppy. The two big ones would be Paramore, whose album After Laughter took on a much more synth poppy sound. Obviously, Hayley Williams is doing some completely different stuff now with her own stuff under Pedals for Armor. But the change under the Paramore banner from everything they'd done prior to After Laughter was excellent. After Laughter is a terrific album. It's like a great running album. It's a great album on its own. And it came kind of right as my tastes were shifting more toward synth pop stuff, not necessarily away from a Paramore type sound, but a lot more of that in my general rotation. The other one is Tegan and Sarah, whose 2016 album Love You to Death made a similar sort of transition and was a phenomenal album. Again, really good mix of kind of higher energy beats if you're running or going to the gym or just want something a little more upbeat. And but staying true to kind of the Tegan and Sarah ethos from a lyrical perspective. And then they carry that over a little bit with their 2019 album, Hey, I'm Just Like You, which isn't quite as synthy as Love You to Death. But it's like the concept for that album is a bunch of songs they wrote when they were really young, reimagined through their current sound and talent level. So you do get a little bit of that Love You to Death-ish song with the all of the regular Tegan and Sarah Hart. So those are the two big ones for me, Paramore and Tegan and Sarah. It's great when a band or bands that you like kind of change their sound to suit your changing tastes. It's much appreciated.
Yeah, I agree with that. Those are great picks.
Our next question comes from Jordan. He asks, of bands that you generally like / would intend on seeing live at some point, which would lend themselves well to a drive-in concert and which wouldn't work at all?
I think this mostly has to be like big production arena bands for me. Like, I feel like if I was going to see a band that I really like seeing in an intimate setting, I don't think the drive-in atmosphere works. But if I was going to see like a Radiohead or a Nine Inch Nails whose stage and light show is such a production, like in and of itself, and it's already sort of like watching visual art, I think that would work fine.
That's a good point. I went a different direction with it. Maybe this is just due to my experience at the Mustang Drive-In in Guelph. I feel like an emotional acoustic set, like a Dashboard Confessional, would do well because you could just get that like drive-in backseat makeup going.
Yeah, I could see that.
I also think if I was allowed to use the condition that I don't have to be the driver, so like I have a DD or someone in the group is DDing, I kind of think country music would do fine with it. Like the idea of sitting on a tailgate with a beer on like a summer night listening to country music does not disagree with me. Even though I'm not a big country guy, that's the exact scenario in which I would want to listen to country.
Yeah, I think country, any of those like, I don't want to say down home because that's not what I mean, but any of those like you said, like just kind of sit back and it kind of feels like you're putting on the radio anyway. I think those would work too.
Yeah. And then the ones that wouldn't work, like basically any band you want to be even remotely close to in the pit for or that thrive on the live crowd energy. So the one that comes to mind, obviously, on our podcast is like, you know, I don't think you'd want to see Pup at a drive-in concert. And any band like that, that like the crowd atmosphere is such a big part of the live show, which is a lot of bands. You know?
Yeah. Any band that makes me feel like I might want to get into a mosh pit, even though I probably won't, I don't think works.
Yeah. Any band where I don't mind pushing people out of the way instead of mumbling, excuse me, as I go to get a new beer.
Yeah, exactly correct.
Yeah, back to me being too nice. Sorry, pardon me. All right, last question. This one comes from Kristen. And she asks, how many times will you listen to a song or album before deciding you don't like it, even if it's from an artist or genre you enjoy?
Good question. I feel like it depends on the artist. If it's a band that means a lot to me, I will give them more leash and like try harder. If it's a band I'm kind of like iffy on, if I don't like it on first listen, I probably won't listen to it again.
Yeah, I think that's probably the most common answer here. So for example, my process when I do those every 3 or 4 months, I put out a call on Twitter of, you know, give me your favorite albums of the year so far. And the reason I do that is one, just to like help people share music or whatever, but also so I can kind of expand what I'm listening to and try out some new stuff. And my process for that is always I will check out 2 songs from an artist or band if they get recommended to me and I haven't heard them before. And that's usually, I feel like if it's something you haven't heard before, that's usually enough to tell if it's something you should spend more time with. So sometimes after that, you know, I will check out the whole album or whatever. But I think within 2 songs for something new, you can get a good feel for what they are. And if it's basically what I said, if it's worth spending more time with. And then on the further end of that, if it's a band I like, I tend to be a little on the too loyal side. For example, I still listen to Taking Back Sunday albums when they come out, even though the last like three of them have all sounded the same and haven't moved the needle for me much. If it's, you know, if it's the first album from a band that I haven't liked, I might sit with it a little more just to see if, you know, the band's change in sound or change in approach, like if it's a slower burn kind of, and I get it after a little while. So yeah, basically what you said, if it's something new, I'll give it a quick spin. And if it's something that I have some attachment to, they get a little more leash to, you know, figure it out or for it to hit.
Yeah. And I think context of the release in the band's story is important too. Like if it's a band that I'm gonna speak directly about the Gaslight Anthem, who put out two of my all-time favorite records, and then one I really liked, and then one I didn't like as much. So my excitement for the follow-up to the one I didn't like as much was very high, to be like, oh, can they get back to where they were? And then instead of doing that, they put out Get Hurt, which is one of the most disappointing albums I've experienced. And this is a song from that album called Stay Vicious, which is one of the better songs on the record, but an album that I, to this day, am sort of still kind of bitter about.
Came out in 2014, so it wouldn't have had a direct impact, but we saw Gaslight Anthem together in a bigger group at Rebel a couple of summers ago, and that I remember that show being a little disappointing too.
Yeah, one of the worst crowds I've ever been at a show with, for sure.
I mean, it's at Rebel.
Yeah,
what
true.
Are we expecting the barbecue beforehand, on the other hand,
that was great.
Very good. Where we go, Cherry Beach,
I think so. Yeah, yes, it was
Cherry Beach barbecue then.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, man. That is the end of the questions. Good questions this week, guys.
A solid
maybe
mailbag.
let's go a little less personal next time. not that anything we did was like anything we talked about was like deeply personal. It's just, you know, it's a bit much on the introspection. Mike, I don't want to, you know. Anyway, I know Mike means well, and he's going to be laughing at me being awkward and stuttering over the answers to those questions. So I'm glad he got something out of it. Jake, it's time to pick a song for the mixtape. I have a feeling you're going to throw out You Want the RX Bandits one on there.
I do, but I'm going to hold off because I want us to do a full episode on them one day.
Okay.
So I'm going to hold off on that.
Makes the mailbag then? So for that reason, I guess we shouldn't do... You know, I feel like Cardinals by the Wonder Years sets up this mailbag the best,
yeah.
But we're definitely going to do a Wonder Years episode at some point. Should we go Ocean Avenue then?
I think so, which like we still might do a Yellow Card episode.
Yeah, but it'd be further down the line.
But yeah, I think of all the, I think that's the thing. All the bands we use today are like possible to probable episodes, but I feel like Ocean Avenue is the furthest away.
Yeah, and like even like Gaslight Anthem, I'm sure we'll do a Gaslight episode, but... We certainly wouldn't do. Yeah, I don't want to put a negative answer as the song.
Yeah,
for the mixtape.
Agreed.
All right, Ocean Avenue it is. And who's gonna argue with Ocean Avenue popping on their playlist? Which
right?
The B-side playlist, by the way, is just a mess of in terms of theme and structure, and it jumps all over the place. But whatever, it's a lot of fun. It's a B-side. It's not supposed to be I mean, it is supposed to be cohesive, but whatever. Ocean Avenue will stand out a little bit based on the last couple songs here. But
that's like, great. That's right, man. That's the B-sides for, though.
Yeah, it's to get weird. We knew when we threw a song that got leaked off the Carter 3 and didn't make the album cut on the mixtape B-side and then found out it wasn't on Spotify, so we had to come up with a replacement Carter 3 leak song. We should have known then.
Here's the thing about the rules of this podcast. We made them up. We make them up. So we can do whatever we want.
Yeah. We sure can. All right. Ocean Avenue for the mixtapes B-side. Guys, this is the end of your May mailbag. Jeez. And it couldn't come at a better time based on how I'm botching the last 5 minutes of this. Jake, thanks so much, man.